This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
That it is. The Mets have to be very, very careful right now. Carlin at 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. We are here until 10 o'clock tonight on Twitter, at Chris Carlin. By all means, check in there. And on Instagram, that guy Carlin as well. We get to the calls very early, 7 p.m. tonight. PJ Carlissimo will join us to discuss the Eastern Conference semifinals, Game 7 tomorrow between the Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks. But we begin tonight with the New York Mets and the news on Jacob DeGrom. Well, let's get the latest update, as it were, from Luis Rojas on the very, very latest.
He's in between start routine. Like I said yesterday, we're approaching this day by day. So that was in today's menu. He came in, it felt good. I mean, he went through the progression of being checked and treatment. And he went out there and he threw his usual 10 pitch or something side that he throws the second day after he pitches, and he felt good. So, you know, a very good day, you know, but we're still approaching this on a day by day. You know, now we'll see how he goes, finishing the day and getting, you know, further treatment if he's needed. And then tomorrow, once again, we'll reassess and we'll see how he feels. And then we'll progress into that day, the third day, which is usually a normal side day for him. But, you know, he'll start in the morning, see how he feels, and then we'll progress into it.
So something that we talked about a little bit last night, but bears repeating, is with all of that being the case and the Mets playing it day by day, I think we can all agree that caution is the best way to proceed, with extreme caution. I understand that Jacob DeGrom is somebody that's going to tell you if something isn't right. We obviously saw that this week and last week when he did, as he was going through starts and feeling something. It's been three different things now: the side, the flexor, the shoulder. What bothers me about it is that these are three separate different things, yes, and maybe that's good in that it's not one thing that's gotten inflamed so much worse. But maybe, just maybe, this is his body trying to tell him something. Bart and I talked about this earlier today on Bart and Hahn. When you're an athlete and things like this happen and you are doing things that are unnatural for the body, which most athletic endeavors are when it comes to being particularly physical, certainly throwing the baseball 100 miles an hour is not anything that is remotely natural for a body. And we understand that. But think about this number for a second. 139. That's the amount of times this season that Jacob DeGrom has thrown a pitch 100 miles an hour or more. That's not counting bullpen before a game. It's not counting anything else. Just all that's been registered on the field. The next closest in all of Major League Baseball to throw the ball 100 miles an hour, X number of times, has thrown it more than 100 miles an hour, 11 times. Overall, there have been 191 pitches in baseball this season that have been 100 miles an hour or more. Jacob DeGrom has thrown 139 of them. Wow. What an absurd, absurd number. He's been so dominant, and that's been a big reason why that velocity has gone up this season. And he benefits greatly from baseball players now more concerned about launch angle and what their swing path is, trying to aim up to hit the ball out of the ballpark. That DeGrom has been able to throw high fastballs and snap off some nasty sliders this year, taking full advantage of those swing paths and really making guys look silly. Their inability to catch up to fastballs, their inability to really put themselves in a position where they have any shot against a guy like that. The Mets have to heed these small warnings from Jacob DeGrom's body, and so does Jacob. Okay, he's doing all these little things on the side as if to get ready for the next start. Can I just ask the question of what harm any rest would do in this situation? The question was asked of Luis Rojas yesterday, and he really didn't have an answer for it. And this is not an accusatory statement. This is more factual than anything else. The Mets are looking at these MRIs, and they don't see anything that's overly alarming, but frankly, they don't want to find anything that's overly alarming. Neither does DeGrom at this point. He's having an out-of-this-world type season, a season the likes of which we have never seen before for a starting pitcher. Nobody wants that to end. But can we all just protect the pitcher from himself and the Mets protect their own investment from themselves? Everybody wants to see him continue to do this. But I think we can all agree, if you have all of these little things popping up, it would seem to be some sort of a warning from your body that something's not right. And maybe just dial it back a little bit before it really blows up in your face. It's the last thing anybody wants. So this is simple enough to me. I'm not a doctor. In no way am I a doctor. You can't convince me that Jacob DeGrom taking a start off, maybe taking an extra day off in between starts here and there, maybe throwing the ball 96, 97, as opposed to 101 all the time, is the worst idea in the world. It's not. It's not. You can't continue to ask your body to do something at this level that nobody's ever done before and expect it to respond positively all the time. Can't expect that there's not going to be some sort of problem. And I feel like these are just little warnings, and you have to pay attention to them. So while we talk about the Mets being somewhat judicious in how they're handling this, it doesn't really feel that way if they're planning on him going out and pitching again in a couple of days. It doesn't feel that way. The simplest thing to do is say, okay, let's dial it back. We know it's not even the greatest time in the world, considering we've got three doubleheaders coming up, but let's dial it back. To me, it's just operating with real caution instead of just saying you're operating with caution and then doing the exact same thing that you have done. That's just crap. Words in this instance, as within many instances in life, don't mean anything. Not in the least. Your actions mean something. So here's the plan. Here's the plan. It's easy enough. Get out of your own way. Get out of your own way. Just dial it back. Jacob, he needs to know that he needs to just maybe sit at 97 as opposed to 101. That would make a difference. Maybe take a start off here. Give yourself a good 10-day rest. Stop doing all this stuff on the side to see how you feel. When the manager keeps talking about his shoulder looks like that of any pitcher, he's not saying that there's not something wrong with it. He's saying that all pitchers have something wrong with their shoulder. And maybe this isn't all that alarming. Well, the plan would simply be an extra start here and there off. Maybe at the All-Star game. Jacob, let's set it up for you to start the Thursday or Friday before the All-Star game. And then you won't start again until the Monday or Tuesday after the All-Star game. So maybe there is a full 8, 9, 10 days off in between. Manage this better. Pay attention to the signs before it explodes. And if you need any convincing, call Matt Harvey. Ask him. 800-919-ESPN. Arthur in Five Towns is going to start us off tonight right here on 98.7. Arthur, what's up, brother? How are you?
I'm good tonight. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Mets have to be smart. Let's go back to Sandy. I won't say the last name. I don't have to. He was almost the same size. He was a little heavier. And there was I forget the name of the biography, where they had a stick figure of his delivery, a catapult, a slingshot, if you will. And there was an article, I think, in Newsday, that at 6'4", 180, DeGrom is the same thing. The body is not designed for that. Be smart with this guy. You know, they said to Sandy Koufax after he retired at a golf tournament, Sandy, straighten your left arm. He said, if I could straighten my left arm, I'd still be pitching. They need to be smarter.
It's pretty simple, Arthur. It's not that you don't want to see this guy pitch, but I don't know about you. I'd rather see him throw 28 starts as opposed to, let's say, 15. You know, it doesn't feel like it's that difficult of a decision.
20.5 ERA. Please.
He's still going to win the Cy Young if he does that. He still could win the MVP if he makes 28 or 29 starts. It's all very possible.
He's a young man. Preserve this guy's career. We're on the same page here, brother.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, Arthur. And it's not... I hate the phrase protecting him from himself. I used it earlier. I understand that. But I think he's going to be smart with when something's not right. He has said it so far so as to try to avoid anything major. But maybe treat these little things with some more importance to them as opposed to just something that doesn't mean a whole lot to you. Something that just, it happened, no big deal. You know, we're good. No, it's listening to what your body is trying to tell you. Maybe they just are warning signs. Maybe that's what they are. Treat them as such. Colin in the Bronx, what's up with you tonight, brother? How are you?
What's going on? We're getting 7 hours and 39 minutes of you today. This is awesome.
Yes, you're getting quite the boatload of me today, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm counting the 9 minutes you were on the K-Show today. So it's 7 hours and 39 minutes, the total of Carlin time today.
You are troubled.
I eat up every minute of it. But really quick, I just want to go with the Mets. Personally, I'm not as maniacal as a Knicks fan as Omar. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, as a Knicks fan who hates the Nets, this is not how I want to see the Nets go down. I wanted to see the Nets full power, fully functional, and then somehow go down because of chemistry or because of other issues or anything like that. Like, so as a Knicks
you
fan,
want them to
I
go down at full strength. You don't want them to have an excuse.
Yeah, exactly. The worst thing I want is my two friends in the whole world that are Nets fans that I can make fun of them for that. But I'm not going to be able to if they have excuses.
Right. You don't want them to be able to say, well, we didn't have everybody. No, you want them to suffer a justifiable death that is as painful as humanly possible. You want them at their full strength, so you take them out completely.
Yeah, you're darn right. That's all I'm hoping for the rest of this year. But and also just one more quick point with the Knicks and stuff. I just don't understand how when any player, no matter who it is, Zion or Luka, how anyone is even remotely disgruntled, it's like, oh, we're finding ways, and every media member has to talk about how they're making it to the Knicks. For example, Zion Williamson is still on his rookie deal. He's got, 3 years left in the rookie deal? And almost it's almost always every single player is going to sign that first super mega deal with the team that they get drafted by. Zion Williamson, best case scenario, absolute best case scenario, is not coming to the Knicks for another 3 years. So can, like, the whole media calm the heck down and let's just enjoy the fact that the Knicks are relevant and we're actually building towards something? And one last thing, has there ever been a team, ever in NBA, Major League Baseball, ever history, ever made that huge blockbuster trade where they send their whole farm system, their all their draft picks, all their young players for that big superstar? Has a team ever actually won a title like that?
But it's, you're talking about in baseball? I mean, in the NBA?
No, in any sport. Any sport, period. That's what I'm saying. In the NBA, all the teams that have made it super teams have done it through free agency or have done it through building it through the draft. No one has ever won it by doing that big blockbuster trade. Like, you just in recent history with the Knicks, they made a huge blockbuster trade for Carmelo Anthony, and it worked out horribly.
Well, but Carmelo Anthony, that was the wrong way to go, Colin. Thanks for the call. Melo was not that guy. And look, he's a terrific player, terrific scorer. Melo is not the guy you build an organization around. He never was, and that should have been clear. But the Knicks were superstar shopping at the time, and I understand that. I understand what they did. To your point, if the Nets don't win a championship, you will have the right point made. You will have that evidence to back you up. But my problem with that is the likelihood of the Nets not winning a championship is purely based around health rather than anything else. I didn't love the Harden trade when they made it. I really didn't, because I liked Jared Allen. I liked Caris LeVert. I liked what they had with a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie, even though he got hurt. If the Nets had Jared Allen and Caris LeVert right now, how do you think they would feel? Well, I mean, LeVert missed time. Thankfully, because of the trade, they found his health ailment and got it taken care of. But LeVert had developed exceptionally well as a player for the Nets. My guess would be he'd be on the court right now. Jared Allen had developed exceptionally well. Now, he got eaten up by Embiid, but I still think that defensively they would have been better. But if James Harden's healthy, and if Kyrie Irving's healthy, and Kevin Durant's healthy, even I have come to the idea of accepting that the Nets would win a championship. And I'm not one of the guys that wanted to do that. Lewis in Brooklyn is up next, 98.7 ESPN. Lewis!
What's up, man? How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Who is your current top five NBA players, 1 through 5, right now as we speak, right now?
1 through 5 in the league right now.
Yep.
All right, well, I think Durant, do you want to tell me yours first, or do you want me to go?
I guess I'll go with mine first, and then you'll respond.
All right, go ahead.
Number one, I got the Greek freak, the one and only, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Number one?
Hot take.
That's a hot take, brother. Go ahead.
For sure. I'm going to go with Luka Doncic.
Yep.
Luka Doncic. And then three, LBJ, LeBron. I think the reason why he got bounced because Anthony Davis was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with KD at 4, and then I'll go Kawhi at 5. That's mine.
All right. I would say that Durant right now is still the best player in the league. So I'd go Durant 1. I'd go Doncic 2. I'd go LeBron 3. I might talk about Donovan Mitchell 4. And then, And then I'd either go Embiid or Kawhi Leonard 5. Kind of a tie there. Okay. I know that's copping out, but that's about where I would go. And here's what's hysterical about that. Neither one of us mentioned the MVP. Neither one of us.
Joking.
Yeah, and neither one of us gave him any consideration, and maybe something's wrong with that. Thanks for the call. I still think, when healthy, Kevin Durant's the best player in the league, period. I truly believe that. LeBron is still right there. Again, when healthy. Ernest in Brooklyn. Ernest, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
Long Good, how are you?
Show. To answer the question of your previous caller said it was never done, it was done. It was done in football. When the Cowboys got a king's ransom for Herschel Walker, and they won a championship, didn't they?
No, his point was when you're getting the player as opposed to trading away all of that stuff.
Well,
in other words,
the Cowboys
got all the draft picks
about the Knicks because they could have waited, and they gave away their whole team to get him, and then they wonder why they couldn't win.
Yeah, no, I listen, but that's the point. He was talking about getting the big player. Ernest! He was talking about getting the big player. Thanks for the call. You got to listen. He was talking about getting the big player. The Vikings didn't win a championship with Herschel Walker. Not the team that is trying to do that and getting all of those draft picks and trading away the big player. Spike in St. Pete, next. Spike, what's up?
Well, good evening, my friend. A couple of quick things. I want to break down this game tomorrow night, which I was, if I was up there, I'd take you and we'd go watch that game.
Yeah.
Top five. First of all, top five. It's KD, LeBron, Kawhi. Donovan Mitchell's a stretch, and he's hurt now. That's another subject.
Well,
and
yeah, I'm talking about when healthy.
Yeah. It's who's healthy now? I was talking with my buddy. He was MVP.
I know. Nobody's healthy right now. You got to wait, you know.
Nobody.
Mitchell's a game time. Yeah.
Terrible. We're all pulling for Chris Paul, you know that? Boy, Doc lost three times with him, had 3-1. Here's the deal. My buddy keeps saying to me, Harden, we love Harden. We know he's a much better defender than all the jokes about him. He's so compromised defensively. We broke down the game, the tape, the whole bit. And this we love to do as a hobby. And his lateral movement defensively is hurting him more. Maybe he'll score. So he says, well, you have no line. You got nobody, I said to him, Chick. You got nobody. There's no one on the bench. Nobody. You can't put a guy that's played 20 games in. You can't. But the theory is what's going to should happen today. They got to adjust it. They got to pack it in. We're back to DeAndre Jordan, his experience. They'll take a charge on him for one. Put him on the line. I'm back to the damn free throw shooting, which sucks. And I can't stand Ben Simmons. He does this again. He does this again tonight to my guy Embiid. I'm really going to be pissed off.
Well, Spike, I mean, listen, he does this again, and thanks for the call. He's not going to be in Philadelphia anymore. If the Sixers lose that series, he's done. He's done. That town will spit him out. Because they have defended him to no end. And, you know, Doc has defended him to his own peril this season. You know, I am, first of all, I complete omission earlier, and I can't believe I did, is that the leaving Steph Curry out of the top five was a mistake and an oversight on my part, obviously. So don't get on me too nuts about that. Mere oversight. He is obviously in the top five, and I'll knock Donovan Mitchell out of there. How about that? Fair? Happy? Okay, good. You know, when I think of Kevin Durant, I think of obviously an absolutely phenomenal player and an all-time great. But for whatever reason, I have just never mentally put him on the same level as LeBron James. And I think that Kevin Durant wants to be on that level. When you hear that Jay Williams story about Giannis and how Durant said to him, don't ever compare me to Giannis. Don't ever compare me to Giannis. Not in the same breath. He takes it as an insult that anybody would ever suggest that Giannis is anywhere near his ability. And by the way, I 100% believe Jay Will on that story. I think I've said that before. There's no doubt in my mind that that absolutely happened. KD wants to be on that level. And frankly, who wouldn't? I mean, he's a tremendous competitor. and he's an amazing player. Not many players could do what he did in Game 5, and as I said, that's going to be one of the all-time games that we will talk about when we discuss Kevin Durant, especially if the Nets end up winning this series tomorrow night. But I think about Durant when I am trying to evaluate pure greatness in the league over the last 15, 20 years, and he's right there, but I can't put him on that next level with LeBron. I've tried to, and I think that the biggest thing that just separates me is how LeBron has taken all these different teams to the finals so many times. Yes, 3-6 in the finals, but 9 trips to the finals. That's absolutely absurd. I mean, think about that for a second. That the finals have not known a series without LeBron James in, what, 8 straight at this point? It's just amazing. And I honestly think that LeBron can do absolutely anything at all on the basketball court. And I'm not saying that Durant can or can't. But what I am saying is that LeBron could do it a little bit better. It may be unfair to say because they're both physically gifted in their own way. When you're Durant and you're 7 feet and you can do the things with the ball that he could do, it's borderline unfair. When you're LeBron, not borderline, it is unfair. When you're LeBron and you're 6'9 and you do the things that he can do at weighing 265, 270 pounds, it's unfair. LeBron, and you've heard me say this before, most physically gifted player I think the league has ever seen. And for me personally, that's why I have always been a critic of LeBron's. Not even a critic, just not the biggest fan in the world. Not somebody that thinks this is no question someone who's automatically better than Jordan and the best to ever play the game. But I'm frankly just about there. I really am, because when you go to all these finals, even though he has a losing record in the finals, when you go to them, you are taking teams there left and right. No matter what it says to me is, no matter where you go, you will play for a championship with this one player. Yes, he needs help. Everybody needs help. It is a much different NBA than it was. But even back then, everybody needed help. Everybody needed to have a few different great players on a team, whether we want to admit that or not. We used to get on LeBron for going and forming the super team with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, as if that wasn't something that happened with Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan didn't do it without Scottie Pippen. He needed Scottie Pippen. He needed a third guy like Dennis Rodman. He needed a third guy like Horace Grant. He needed excellent talent and role players around him. He was great, but to be a champion, that's what he needed. And so when I look at Durant, I don't criticize Durant anymore for picking up and going to Golden State or for getting together with Kyrie and going to Brooklyn. And now finding a way to help get James Harden to Brooklyn. I don't, because championships are just not won by one superstar and a bunch of role players. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And if you're being honest with yourself, it never really did. I mean, the times that it has happened has been more of the exception than the rule. So for me, as dynamic of a player as Kevin Durant is, as prolific of a scorer as Kevin Durant is, perhaps when it's all said and done, the best scorer in the history of the NBA, I just don't put him on LeBron's level. And this is coming from somebody that has not always been the biggest LeBron fan. Am I wrong? Carlin, 98.7 ESPN. Sean Baldwin next. Sean, go.
Hey, Carlin, how you doing?
I'm great, brother. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Just getting off from work, and I always listen to your show. You have a great show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, I was calling to tell you I'm slighting Kevin Durant just a little bit. I believe LeBron is a great player, you know, and but LeBron has some breaks. LeBron plays in the weaker conference, number one. You know, that's how he was able, I believe, to get, you know, a little more lucky to get to those H3 finals. And LeBron had much more elite franchise-carrying players, you understand, than KD had, or even Michael had. You know, you couldn't put Dennis Rodman as a franchise player on any team.
No, I'm not calling him a franchise player. I'm calling him the number three that you needed.
Yeah, I understand. Like, he definitely was well-needed, but think about who LeBron had. LeBron had Kyrie, who was a franchise player. Anthony Davis, who's a franchise player. Chris Bosh, who's a franchise player.
Yeah, but remember, there was the year that he got to the finals, and he had Kyrie, and he got hurt, and Kevin Love was hurt, and it was basically LeBron dragging a team home.
And he definitely can do that. He is probably the only player that is capable earlier on in his career that can do that. But you got to remember that LeBron, you know, has a lot of the playmaking skills that Kevin Durant doesn't have, but KD is never asked to do that. If you put that, as you saw the other night, in his, you know, for him to do that, he can definitely do that.
Yeah, listen, I don't deny that. And this is why I'm thinking more about it. But the biggest thing that is separating them for me right now is all the finals appearances. And so,
yes, and I get that.
And Durant had plenty of opportunities, you know, with really, really good players in Russ and early with Harden, and just couldn't get it done there, you know? And so he went and chased it. And I'm not getting on him about that. I get it.
He definitely made the finals, and he lost to a better, more experienced team and veterans than, you know, he was young.
Yes.
He made it to the finals. He lost against LeBron. And Harden definitely wasn't the player that he is now then.
No doubt that's true. Thanks for the call. Harden didn't blossom fully until he went to Houston because he just was never going to be that level of player that he turned out to be when you had Russ and Durant with him. But Harden as a number three with that group, I mean, that's pretty damn impressive. No? I would think so. So as far as your ability to convince me there, I'm going to say no. 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 Next, let's see if our friend Thomas in Manhattan can convince me. Thomas, how are you, my friend?
Okay. How are you?
I'm good. What do you got?
Great. I disagree with you. I am the biggest LeBron fan, but I do think that KD is on LeBron's level. He's beaten in two out of three finals. He's a multiple MVP. He has five. He is the closest one to LeBron, who's playing today. And LeBron has 11. Oh, yeah, LeBron is ahead of everybody actively playing today as far as being the number one playoff scorer of all time over the Rockstar Hall of Famers also. But KD, again, his four scoring titles, his two out of three wins against LeBron in the finals, his multiple MVPs. I consider a lot of players, a couple of players who are the greatest of all time as far as different positions and stuff like that. I would also consider Havlicek and Bird and Karl Malone. Again, those are the greatest all-time forwards, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you're putting them on the level with LeBron and Durant?
I'm saying if you had a draft and you lost to have on LeBron or Durant, and you
you'd be okay.
Bird,
you wouldn't be crying. Okay, just to be clear, those two are above Larry Bird. They are above Havlicek. They are above who was the third that you said?
Havlicek
and Bird
Malone.
And who? Huh?
And Havlicek.
Well, whoever it was, they were better. I know that. But thanks for the call, Thomas. Look, the 2 out of 3 thing, it's not doing it for me. It's not doing it for me. Not when there's such a disparity in the amount of appearances in the finals. So, yes, LeBron's been in the league longer by 4 more years than Durant has been in the league. So, we could definitely see Durant, especially in his current situation, appearing in more finals. I don't know if we're going to see that from LeBron anymore. Primarily because I don't know that I trust Anthony Davis as his number two. Maybe I'm being unfair there, but it doesn't really feel quite right to me. How about Jack in Rockaway? Jack is next, 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Jack.
How you doing, guys? I'm a lifelong Brooklyn Nets fan. Durant, he'll never be on LeBron's, but you have Jordan, you have LeBron, and there's a gap. He's probably ahead of Nowitzki and Garnett because of his ability to handle the ball and just to be a better scorer. But his legacy is going to really be defined probably tomorrow because, honestly, the NBA, when you're over 30, 32, look 2-3 years back. Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, Kevin Love, they were all NBA players 2 to 3 years ago. Now they're out of the league or borderline out of the league.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You can't put Durant in that same discussion as those guys. You can't do it because his body type is much different than theirs. He's much more lithe. Go ahead. All right, good talk. Durant, his body type is much, much different than that of LaMarcus Aldridge and, you know, Blake Griffin. Much different. I mean, and those guys had breakdowns. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge, for Pete's sake, was going to be on this team and had to retire because of the injury this year. So let's not lose sight of that. I don't think you want to put them in that same discussion when you're talking about injuries. Rashawn in Queens is next on 98.7 ESPN. Hello, Rashawn.
Hey, Chris. I think that you're right. I think that KD is just a level below LeBron. I think when people compare, people try to make the comparison of Jordan and LeBron and say that, you know, LeBron has played in the weak East. And people seem to forget that Michael couldn't get out of the first round, that he made it to the playoffs with a sub-500 record like 3 years in a row. So those are things that easily get lost over. KD will never live down being up 3-1. He was the man on his team, and then he lost and joined the team that he lost to. After that, you can't ever be.
It was a tough one. It was a tough pill to swallow when you go and join the team that beat you.
And then LeBron loses Love and Kyrie and still almost beats the Warriors, taking them to 6 by himself, basically. There's really no other people there with him, and he's still able to push them to that point. Averaging a triple-double in the finals, all kinds of stuff like that. There's just too many things that LeBron does well, and KD really just started playing defense.
I don't think that's LeBron, fair. I don't think it's fair to say that.
He started playing defense at a higher level at this point. Initially, he was really all about offense. And LeBron played both sides of the ball for many years in his prime while he has been the greatest player in the game.
Appreciate the call. Listen, I think LeBron physically is just, and as gifted as KD is, I mean, I think LeBron has the best pure physical gifts that this league has ever known. I truly believe that. You know, Wilt was up there, but still, I mean, it's hard to imagine somebody being able to do everything as well as LeBron has done throughout his entire career. There has not been anybody yet, and there's frankly been one or two have agreed with me about where KD belongs versus LeBron, especially after this game tomorrow and what happens tomorrow. Sixers down 7 29-22 Hawks, start of the second quarter. I don't see Ben Simmons on the floor. I've seen him on the bench quite a bit. Boy, he is, I'll tell you what. I'll get back to the calls in a second, but can I just vent for a moment? Just on a little bit of a personal level, and you're not going to care that much, so I normally don't do this kind of thing, but just hear me out. Ben Simmons has been a losing player since day one in the NBA, and he is someone that does not care to get better at his weaknesses. And I can't stand that in a player. Especially somebody who's supposed to be a superstar. Somebody that loves to just be a complete front runner in every way. That's Ben Simmons. Let me do everything I do great and show you all the magical passes I can make. But when it comes to making free throws, nah, that's okay. You're a freaking point guard in this league. You're a freaking point guard. And you went 4-for-14 the other night. That's sickening. And you're a 60% free throw shooter. That's sickening. Lonzo Ball was shooting his first 2 years from the free throw line in the 40s. Then he went up to 58%. You know what he shot this year? 78% from the line. Get better. Simmons won't even dare take an outside shot. If it's outside the key, don't even bother. He's not a threat in the least. That is not great. That is not a great player. And I saw this from day one. So, you know, I worked in Philly for a year. It was Simmons' first year in the league. And I've told this story before. I don't know if you heard it. If you did, I apologize. But nonetheless, it still bugs me to this day. Ben Simmons was a rookie the first year that Joel Embiid, after missing his first two seasons, could actually play. So Embiid was playing some. Simmons was injured, you'll remember. He got injured before the season, and he was missing at least half the year for the 76ers. Or so we thought. Well, Ben missed the entire year. He could have played in the second half of the season. He didn't. You know why? Because with Nike, he had a deal where if he won the rookie of the year and was on the all-rookie team, he picked up a $5 million bonus between the two. $5 million bonus between the two. So, because he didn't play that first year, he was still qualified to be rookie of the year the following year. In his second year, just because he hadn't stepped foot on the floor. So he and the Sixers, Brian Colangelo, had an agreement that he would not play at all his rookie year, as opposed to wanting to make sure that he got some time on the floor with Embiid. They actually were not terrible that year, especially when Embiid played. So they could have made the playoffs late in the season. Yes, it's the eighth seed in the East, and they may not have done much. But the point was, you actually get your feet wet in that situation. But this guy could not be bothered. And I understand it's $5 million and it's easy for me to sit here and say that. But let's call it what it is. When you're an NBA player and you're of that amount of talent, you're going to be able to make up that $5 billion somewhere and do it relatively quickly. And so he's a max player and can't be bothered to get better at shooting free throws, can't be bothered to get better at shooting, period. It is borderline athletic cowardice, if that makes sense, that you're afraid to go and attack your weaknesses because you don't want to look bad. Dear God. Yeah. Okay, thanks for indulging me. As far as Game 7, let's spend a minute here on who it means the most for. And you might argue that it's Durant, but it's not. It's Giannis. It's 100% Giannis. And this is not the legacy game, okay? We can talk legacy all we want. Part of a legacy game is what we saw the other night from Durant. Because a legacy game is one of those games where you will talk about much later when you are evaluating the overall greatness of a player as they get later in their career. This game for Giannis, because of where he is in his career, so young still, is a I belong in that discussion game. You are on the road against a team that is wounded. You are a dynamic player in the league. You have what was an absolutely phenomenal game at home in game six. But in game five, you had bad moments that are going to stick with people for a long, long time. So if you're Giannis Antetokounmpo tomorrow against the Nets, this is a game that you should go dominate, that you should go win, that you should have that incredible impact on to take your perception to that next level, to that I belong here among the top players in the game. We all consider him that already, right? But the superstars are made in the postseason. Trae Young is turning himself into a superstar, incredibly young in his career with what's going on this season. He's been just absolutely phenomenal, taking himself to another level. That's what Giannis needs to do. I'm looking at him after what his history is, and I'm saying tomorrow night is the night that Giannis has to go prove what greatness is all about in him. Wounded team on the road. It's a pick'em situation. They're completely disrespecting the Milwaukee Bucks with that. Nobody believes that you're going to go and win that game, and even though it's a pick'em. I don't think people believe the Bucks are going to go win that game. Just because they don't believe in the Bucks enough. Not because they do believe in the Nets. 800-919-3776. Let's hit the calls. There have been a few of you who have been patient, including D in Jersey City. D, you're up next on 98.7 ESPN. How are you doing?
Good evening. I know you had a caller that said about the favorites, but I'm a KD fan. But I think that Nike helped embellish a lot of athletes, and I think LeBron is also one of those athletes that was embellished by Nike. And you said something about Larry Bird. Larry Bird is a legend. Larry Bird is one of the baddest players before brands. His brand was the Boston Celtics, which would make him a team. So don't discredit Bird when it comes.
I'm not discrediting Larry Bird by saying Durant's better than Bird.
I just said, just give Bird his respect. Bird was
absolutely. I give. Listen,
Bird outplayed the lead.
I agree. I agree. I'm just saying Larry Bird's not as good as Kevin Durant.
I know, but I'm trying to use that also to say that Nike is good at embellishment. Remember they had LeBron with Witness. He won nothing with Witness. And only time he started really winning is when he had D-Wade and Chris Bosh, which is two Hall of Fame players. And D-Wade is a great player that people don't realize how great Dwayne Wade is of a player.
I think
he
people
was.
Realize how great Dwayne Wade is.
No. A lot of people don't give Dwayne a lot of credit because the brand of Nike embellished LeBron. See, what I said initially, Mr. Chris, was that I'm a Durant fan. Durant don't have to be on LeBron James' level. Durant is on a level way beyond LeBron. And like I said, on the fifth, I think it was game six. Okay, no, game five. Durant, bring your big game to tomorrow also. And then we could. I'll call you Monday. Durant don't need to be on LeBron's level. Big game, Durant. I love you, Mr. Carlin.
D, thanks for checking in. I think the only one that believes Durant needs to be on LeBron's level is Durant, though. That's the thing. And his fans feel that way. I get it. I just don't think he is quite there. he may end up being there by the end of his career, but at 32, I don't know that he's going to do what LeBron has done as far as finals appearances, 10 overall, 9 straight. Look, he could win more championships than LeBron. But when you get to a certain level in terms of how many times you get a chance to play for one, it obviously speaks to your greatness in a different way at that point. When you're just there every year. 3-6, not ideal. I'm not going to argue that. But in the end, you're not going to be able to take away, or not take away, I hate that. I hate it when we say you can never take it away from him. You're not going to be able to discount all of those trips to the finals. I mean, this, it can't be real, can it? It can't be real. Jacob, Brian, I'm going to need your take on this in a minute. It can't be real. I mean, I'm praying that it is, but it can't be. Nicolas Cage has a movie coming out. At least, you know, there's a trailer for it, but I don't know if it's like from Funny or Die. There is a movie coming out from I'm having trouble even saying this.
You can't even speak.
I wow. can't because I'm so excited by the possibility that this is actually true, and yet I cannot even believe that it's actually true. Okay, here goes. Nicolas Cage has a movie coming out called Pig. This movie has Nicolas Cage as a retired chef who took his truffle pig that he has as a pet to the Pacific Northwest and retired.
Wait, what?
Yes. I'm not done yet. He retired as a chef. He moved to the Pacific Northwest with his truffle pig as his pet. Okay? I guess that he retired because something bad happened in his personal life as a professional chef. Apparently, one of the lines is, "I remember every meal I ever cooked. I remember every person I ever served. You live your life for them, and they don't even see you. You don't even see yourself." Like, I'm reading this word for word, okay? The pig gets pignapped. You guessed it.
No.
It sounds like John Wick.
John Wick with a pig.
Oh, my
God. Is this true? Is this true? I'm Googling it, and I swear to God that the internet is just messing with me. This, oh my dear God, let it be true. Let it be John Wick with a pig, please.
I think it might be real.
Oh,
I'm Googling.
There's the issue of the, I mean, here we go. Here's what I'm reading as part of, it's from eater.com, ironically. There's the issue of a kidnapped pig. Truffle-related crimes are actually real and pretty scary. And this one is personal.
What?
Oh, my God. He is living out in the woods all alone with his truffle pig, and somebody kidnapped it. So now it's personal.
Wow.
In theaters, July 16th. I haven't been to the movies in a theater, you know, well before March of last year. Probably not since 2019 at some point. This is going to be the first movie I see.
Come on, Chris. Out of all movies.
And it might be opening night. that I have. I've like, there are so few times in my life that I had to get there for opening night of a movie. I did it for the original Batman in 1989, but that wasn't even about me. That was more about a couple of my friends who really wanted to go. And I'm trying to think of some others in the theater, but for some ungodly reason, and I hadn't even seen Godfather 1 and Godfather 2, but Godfather 3 came out on Christmas Day, and I went with two friends on opening day to see Godfather 3, which, as we all know, was an absolute nightmare. So having said all of that, now I am in a position of having to clear my schedule on July 16th. Because Nicolas Cage.
Can't speak.
I can't even speak. I'm so excited and afraid that it's not true. Nicolas Cage in John Wick with a pig. And the name of the movie is just Pig. Oh, dear God. Gentlemen, your initial reactions.
I'm laughing because I'm seeing, like I guess, the poster for it, and they have, like, the pig in the front and then the beard in the background. Oh. So,
yeah, it's the beard. He has let his hair go completely.
He's
a recluse.
How much money is he getting paid for this? Because, like, that's my first impression. Like,
I'm honestly intrigued. At first, I thought you was going, when you first read it, it was going down towards, like, the Castaway vibes.
Right.
But then, as soon as the pig got kidnapped, I'm like, John Wick. There we go. I'm all in, though. I'll be down to watch it.
It didn't get kidnapped. It got pignapped.
And it's a she. The pig is a she.
The pig is a she.
Yeah, in search of a beloved foreign pig after she is kidnapped.
Oh, my God. I swear to God, I think Nicolas Cage would do this movie for free. I don't think he needs to be paid. This just, it is, oh. It is amazing that I just read that, and this appears to be 100% accurate. And the trailer's out if you want to go see it.
Oh, I will definitely watch it in the first break.
Yeah. The trailer is on YouTube. Wow. I can't tell you how. I mean, it just took my breath away. The whole thought of it just took my breath away. Oh. So good. You know, I gotta hope at some point, and I know they killed his dog, and I don't want the pig to be killed, but there better be some bacon in here at some point.
Oh, my gosh.
Carlin, 98.7. ESPN.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.